of your Walt Disney World vacation.
The top six reasons not to overlook Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 15 of the World of Walt podcast, Make the Most of Your Walt Disney World Vacation, for the week of April 5th, 2015. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans, whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. Before we dive into today's topic, please stick around till the end of the show. I've got some information on how we can stay in touch and some important details on how you can win a great prize just for listening. Today we're going to explore one of my all-time favorite Walt Disney World attractions, the Carousel of Progress. It's been in three different locations. It's had three, yes, not two, but three different theme songs. And it's a classic that's easy to overlook when it really shouldn't be. It plays an important role in the history of Walt Disney World, and actually Walt's fingerprints are all over the attraction. So whether you're a raging fan of the Carousel of Progress like I am, or you'd just like to learn a little bit more about Disney history, I think you're really going to enjoy the conversation today. To help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome someone to the show who, I'll bet, has more plays on his iPhone for the soundtrack of the Carousel of Progress than I do, Derek Hoffman. Derek, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Herb. I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me to talk about a topic that I, too, enjoy very much. I love the Carousel of Progress.
So, and tell me about how many plays you have on your iPhone of carousel-related sound.
That's a great question. It's definitely a lot, and I'll tell you why it's a lot, because I have this routine every Saturday morning without fail, unless I'm traveling. I wake up before everybody. I get the kitchen make the kitchen a huge mess, a scene of flour and all kinds of goodies all over the walls and the ceilings. I make my pancakes and bacon for the family, and when I do it, I have the Carousel of Progress theme song and the actual attraction audio as well playing in the background. I don't know how that tradition became a tradition that I do every Saturday morning, but it just stuck with me. And now when I go and actually experience the attraction, and I'm sitting there, I don't know how it works, but I'll sit there and start to think, man, pancakes and bacon would be really good right about now. Very Pavlovian.
I like the your Saturday morning ritual and many levels, actually.
So, yeah.
It's a good one.
It's not good for the cholesterol, but it's good for the soul.
And that's important, too.
Yeah.
All right, before we get back to the Carousel of Progress, I've got a warm-up question for today. It's easy. Are you ready?
All right.
All right, here's your question. Camp Minnie Mickey or Land of Pandora?
Interesting. Let's see. Well, I'm one of those folks who, when I hear of a major change coming about, or where there's going to be some substitutions or anything like that, I get excited because I know that what's going on behind the scenes in the labs of Imagineering is pretty incredible. And I really can't even imagine what they have in store for us as guests. So I'm going to say that I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do with Pandora. Just with, you know, being a Disney geek, the technology, the storytelling, how it's all going to play into that section, that's going to be pretty darn cool in my opinion. So that's going to be my vote.
I am right there with you. I appreciate the fact that Disney was able to keep the Festival of the Lion King. And, you know, beyond that, there wasn't a ton of stuff going on back at Camp Minnie Mickey, at least not in its later years. I'm not the biggest fan of Avatar, but I do have a lot of faith in what the Walt Disney Company does, and I'm looking forward to what comes to that section of the Animal Kingdom.
Agreed. Definitely.
And I forgot to mention at the top that we are coming today from the Carolwood Pacific Room at the Villas at Disney's Wilderness Lodge, so you may hear some people in the background enjoying the area while we record. All right, so we are diving into the top six reasons not to overlook Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress. And Derek, number one, over to you.
Ooh, number one, let me see. I think the number one thing, if I'm telling somebody or trying to encourage them to visit this attraction, they may not be familiar with it. The first thing that comes to my mind, Herb, is probably storytelling. You know, storytelling is something that is very key in how all these attractions come together at Walt Disney World and Disneyland as well. And I think the storytelling that goes on at the Carousel of Progress is really no different. You know, if you think about it, they could have used this as a platform to talk about where we've come from in terms of technology and innovation and how there was the GE tie-in there, and done it very in a very sterile environment to say, here's where we've come from, here's where we are today, and here's what we can do in the future. But instead, they said, you know what, let's take this a step further. Let's weave a storyline into what we're trying to do here and to introduce these concepts. And, you know, so we're introduced to this family that kind of morphs through the years. Maybe we see they look a little different through the different sets and scenes. I'm not entirely sure if we're supposed to assume that that's the same family entirely, but it certainly seems that way. But when you think about how they weave their daily lives and some of the things that they talk about in the different scenes into those technologies, I think that's a really brilliant thing to do because it's interesting. You know, I would be interested in seeing the technology as it has progressed and how our lives have been enriched through these different innovations. But when you see it in terms of how, you know, somebody's actually living through it, that's really cool. And it makes me interested and I feel like I'm connecting with those people. So, you know, when you see John and Sarah interacting and seeing how, you know, for example, Sarah is redoing the rumpus room. it's kind of, you know, catchy. There's some tongue-in-cheek humor in there. And I think that's a really neat way to do it. And that's something that makes me want to come back and see it over and over again because, you know, I like the story. It's entertaining to me.
I agree with you. It's got great storytelling. And I can't really think of a lot of other Walt Disney World attractions that follow a family across time like this one does. I think there are a lot of unique things about the Carousel of Progress, but I think that method of relaying the story is very unique. And I think the fact that they do that, just like you said, it's very entertaining. So we're actually learning a lot about how electricity changed through the 20th century and what appliances looked like of different types in different periods of time. But it's the interaction of the people, it's the story, it's the banter that really makes it fun.
There's old Uncle Orville, who's, you know, he has such a small part in the overall, you know, scheme of the storyline, but he still makes me laugh. I think it's kind of funny and some of the humor that comes through there. Obviously, some of it may be a little bit dated, but in some respects, though, I think some of the dialogue and the storyline itself, I think, holds up very well, and I think it's still very entertaining every time I see it today. Even though I've probably been on the attraction hundreds of times, I still can't wait to go do it again.
No privacy around this place. That was my attempt at an Uncle Orville.
That was good.
Yeah, thanks. So, storytelling, great. I agree 100%. All right, number two, over to me. I think a reason not to overlook the Carousel of Progress is the fact that Walt has his fingerprints all over that attraction. So let's rewind back to the late 1950s. Disneyland's doing pretty well at that time, and Walt is looking to expand Main Street USA. And what he's got as an idea is something called Edison Square. And in Edison Square, what he wanted to do is put together a show which would be hosted by an electromechanical man. Very interesting term. And the idea behind this show that Walt wanted to add to Disneyland was to show the evolution of electricity in the home. And what he wanted to do was talk about how appliances had changed and who else to help fund such a project but General Electric. So way back in the late 50s, early 60s, General Electric was very often number one on the list of the Fortune 500, meaning pretty much the biggest corporation in the world, definitely the most powerful. So Walt, I can see, probably wanted to hook up with this company. They had money and they had influence. Interesting, looking at the 1964 list of the Fortune 500, the Walt Disney Company didn't even show up. Mm. So I think it sort of shows that the Walt was looking for someone to help fund his dreams in a time when he needed people to help fund his dreams. So he approached General Electric and talked about how this attraction was going to work. And the idea would be that there were different acts where you would follow a family over time. And after each act, the audience would stand up and walk over to the next section of the theater to watch the next act. Unfortunately, Walt's dreams were a little bit ahead of the technology at the time, and it just wasn't possible for him to come up with a show that was going to do it justice with the technology that was available. So I have heard many times that good ideas never die at the Walt Disney Company. They just hang around until the technology catches up, and I think that's true here. So Disney continues to work on its technology, and in 1963 it opens the Tiki Room, which was the first to feature audio animatronic technology. So now we're getting pretty close to the 1964-65 World's Fair, and corporations like General Electric are looking for people to help them create pavilions which are entertaining. And by this time, the Walt Disney Company now had enough confidence in its technology that it could pull off something like what it wanted to do in Edison Square. So once again, Walt pitched the idea for a story that would show the progress of electricity over time. And this time, the General Electric folks loved it, and he had the technology to be able to deliver on it. So Walt delivered the Carousel of Progress for the 1964-65 World's Fair, and it was a hit. There were people waiting up to an hour to get on the attraction, and as I'll talk about a little bit later, that attraction could entertain a lot of people. So the fact that it could entertain a lot of people, and still there were huge waits, is pretty amazing. And beyond all that, Walt was a smart dude. What he decided to do was, after the World's Fair was over, he kept the rights to the Carousel of Progress, and he took it back to Disneyland, and he actually did get to tell his story in his park about the story of electricity and following a family over time. So Walt was very actively involved in this attraction, from pitching the idea, well, coming up with the idea originally, pitching it at a time when the technology finally caught up, and then bringing it back to Disneyland so that he could fulfill his dream to tell that story in his own park. So the fact that Walt was so intimately involved in the Carousel Progress, I think to me is very nostalgic and just fascinating to see the end result and the fact that it has held up so well over the last 50 years.
You know what I think is crazy that kind of blows my mind about that is if you think about an hour wait. So yeah, an hour wait's a bummer. But when you see the pictures of the World's Fair in 64, even the old pictures of Disneyland in the first decade, the attire that people wore to those events back then is very different than the attire people wear today. You don't see Nike shoes. People wearing their wingtips and their suits and their derby hats, and they were dressed very well. Can you imagine standing in line in the sunshine for an hour dressed like that? That's impressive.
It is impressive. Yeah, I can't really tell you the last time I wore a suit and tie to Walt Disney World.
We should try that one day.
That would be interesting.
Nice throwback.
Maybe in March, that would be a good thing to do. Not so much in July or August.
Yeah.
All right, number three, back over to you.
Yeah, okay. So, well, you know, another thing that I think is really interesting, when I pitched the idea of this attraction to my friends, is the details. And you know, going back to kind of the first point with storytelling, I think you need the details to really to effectively tell the story. And you know, when I say the details, I mean, you know, if you sit like up in the front row and really look at the sets that they have in there, they could have just easily thrown up the audio animatronic characters and just put just a blank curtain behind them and just have them talk. And that's kind of cool just to see the audio animatronics. But when you see that they're actually inside their homes and what they furnish the homes with, you know, looking at the fixtures on and like the sinks or the wall coverings, the paintings and the pictures that are on the wall, all the appliances that are around, it really looks like you're stepping into what a house would have looked like at that period of time. And you know, that's one of those things where, you know, people often gripe about getting stuck on a ride. I love getting stuck on ride because it gives me a chance to actually stop and really soak in the details of what the Imagineers have put into these attractions. And, you know, I've only been stuck on Carousel of Progress once or twice. But, again, I was just in awe at what I saw. And, you know, there's some interesting things that, you know, in addition to the actual details of making the sets look realistic to what you would have seen in those periods of time inside someone's house. The Imagineers also had a little fun, and you know, there's some hidden Mickeys that are buried in there. But there's also some fun things, especially in the final scene where it's supposed to be like, you know, the present day or the futuristic type of setting for the family, where the Imagineers buried some neat little things like, you know, some people have talked about on the cork board. There's a little yellow post-it note that says, "Marty called, once changes." I was told that that's a nod to Marty Sklar, who was very crucial, very very important person in terms of helping Walt Disney World to come about and to be completed after Walt's passing. And someone who, you know, even to this day, I believe still has, you know, some degree of contact with the company. There's also, if you notice, right next to the oven, the double oven in that scene, there's a whiteboard. And if you sit up in the front row or you have really good eyes or a good telephoto lens in your camera, you'll see on the whiteboard, they have a little note as if somebody was, you know, writing a note. They're on the phone. Hey, Grandma and Grandpa are coming in. Here's their flight number. It says Grandma and Grandpa flight 1964, 10 a.m., which is a funny nod, I think, to 1964 being the year in which the World's Fair in New York was opened, where they debuted the show. That even the court board, and I said, there's a lot of little things that are up there that I'd love to be able to just walk up on the stage and see what they are up close, because, you know, there's some photos that are, they look like real photos, I'm guessing, you know, children of the Imagineers. You know, these are personal photographs that they used. It's just neat, and I'd love to have someone walk me through all the details of everything that went in there. I know that's not really possible, but, you know, just kind of look and soak it all in. It makes me feel like, wow, there's just so much going on. I feel like I'm a part of this family. I'm really hanging out with them in their living room. That's such a cool thing to think about, and how they really went to painstaking efforts to make you really feel immersed in this story via the details.
I agree with you. I love the details in the Carousel of Progress. I've often noticed how the floor is slanted up a little bit in the back so that you can probably see the dog a little bit better. I've often wondered, how do they get these appliances from the turn of the century? So did someone in Imagineering go back and handcraft the icebox, and did they find that vacuum cleaner at somebody's garage sale? But everything fits the period so well. And I've often wondered, how did they put those things together? And I bet in 1964 it was easier to find an icebox than it is these days. But the detail there is just tremendous.
Yeah, they're trolling Craigslist. There's a whole team of Craigslist people here at Walt Disney Imagineering.
That would be a good job.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Sign me up for that.
I agree. Details, great. All right, so number four, I'm going to go a little bit on a detour, but hang in there with me. So what I'd like to talk about is the technology of moving people when it comes to the Carousel of Progress. So I mentioned before that the Carousel of Progress was sort of ahead of its time when it came to technology. It wasn't until the animatronics were developed for the Tiki Room that the company had confidence to say they could do it on a bigger scale, and they did. That was definitely a technological advance that we saw come to pass in the Carousel of Progress. But something else that was very interesting to me was the technology of moving people. So I mentioned before that the Carousel Progress in the 1964-65 World's Fair would have waits of an hour, and people would stand outside waiting. So I did a little bit of research on some numbers. So the Carousel of Progress, each theater can hold 200 people, and each scene lasts 4 minutes. So that means that the Carousel of Progress, if everything is working properly, can serve 3,000 people an hour. That's a lot of people to put through a ride in 1 hour. To give it some context, I did a napkin calculation. My guess is that the average Magic Kingdom attraction can probably process about 1,500 people in an hour, so half that number. So, for example, Peter Pan's flight, only about 800 people during an hour. The Barnstormer, only 350 people an hour. Now, whether on the high end, something like the Mansion or Pirates of the Caribbean is also around 3,000. The fact that the Walt Disney Company and Walt himself came up with this concept of moving the people around the scenes and doing it in an audience setting that's big enough to process that many people in an hour, I think is just very interesting. And it raised for me the question, does Disney use this sort of technology somewhere else? Because I know I've never really been on the Carousel of Progress where it has to be stopped because someone needs some extra time to load or unload. That happens all the time in Haunted Mansion. But I have never really seen that happen with a Carousel of Progress. I think it talks about the quality and the uniqueness of the design. So to me, just the whole way the theater was put together, where the audience rotates around, the fact that it could serve so many people is just fascinating to think about.
I have been stuck on it before, and I'll tell you the reason I know what happens is, and this is because this is a personal experience. I was in the middle of one of the shows, and I remember this distinctly. Somebody decided they needed to leave the theater. Well, it turns out, as the way the ride is set up, if one of those doors opens in the event of an emergency, it basically shuts the ride down. They have to reset it, and it is a mess. And people get antsy, of course. So my advice to anyone listening to this, if you're on the Carousel of Progress and you decide, you know what, I've got to bail to go catch my my noon reservation at the Plaza, hang tight for a second, because you're going to really wreck it for the rest of the however many hundreds of people that are on the Carousel of Progress at that point in time. Obviously, if it's an emergency, you got to go. But please stay seated at all times. Keep your arms and hands inside the vehicle, because it does take a while to reset it.
Interesting. Maybe they need to add seatbelts to Carousel of Progress. I never thought about that.
Yeah, lap bars.
All right, good. We're back over to you for number five, Derek.
Okay. Well, this one's an interesting one. It's something that hits close to home, and I think there's an educational element, obviously, to so many aspects of a vacation to Walt Disney World, but I think you can say the same about the Carousel of Progress. And from a personal perspective, I saw this happen with my niece. We first brought my niece here when she was five, and when we took her out of school, yes, we were one of those people that took their kids out of school to go to Disney. We had a discussion with the teacher, and the teacher said, well, you know, she's five. You know, have her draw a picture of something that, you know, she thought was interesting or something she may have learned. And when we gave her that some time to do that, the first thing that she did was she drew a picture of the set of the Carousel of Progress when they're in around the 1920s. And when she drew the living room area, she drew all the wires that are hanging all through the house. And her takeaway from that was, you know, there was a time when, in order to get electricity in the house, that was how you did it. There were exposed wires, everything was out there just in order to connect everything. It wasn't buried in the walls like it is today. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting, like how her five-year-old brain processed that. And I thought, you know, this is a really good example of how, you know, they can take a concept that may be kind of abstract and make it concrete, something that's very visual and represented in a way that can allow for even, you know, someone as young as five or even younger to be able to understand and comprehend what that means and how that impacts them. And, you know, that can spark some good curiosity in them. So, you know, of course, when you're here with your family and you're experiencing these attractions, I think there's a lot of opportunity for parents or, you know, in my case in that time was, you know, aunt and uncle to have a conversation with the child and say, you know, tell me what you saw there. Tell me if you have questions. Let's talk about it. And that kind of conversation is going to be around in many times topics that you don't typically encounter in your everyday life. You know, I don't think if we walked into someone's house and they had exposed wires just hanging out, I don't think we'd say, look, we want to hang out there. I think we'd say, let's go call the building inspector. I think this is like a major code violation. This is a safety issue. But no, because she's never seen that, and it really helped us to then have that conversation with her and say, you know, yes, today, you know, when you go to plug in, you know, your television into the electric outlet, yeah, there's wires behind the wall that, you know, feed the energy to that outlet that allow you to watch your TV. That was a neat way to introduce that concept to her. So I think that's just yet another example of how many educational opportunities there are here on a Disney vacation. But I would challenge people to enjoy that attraction and sit there and start to think about how can I have that conversation with my children and do it in a way that is allowing them to see the world in a little bit different light and maybe appreciate what we have a little more than what we may have otherwise done.
I am right there with you. I can't think of another organization that can do what Disney does when it comes to combining entertainment and education. So if someone were to come up to me as a 5-year-old or a 12-year-old and say, let's talk about the history of electricity, I would probably say, boring, no thank you. Yeah. Or let's talk about how the Office of the President of the United States has changed over time. Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's the most boring thing ever. Who would want to even think about such a thing on their vacation? Yep. But Disney has a way of combining education and entertainment in a way like no other. And it you don't even feel like you're being educated. You're being entertained, and you're educated along the way. And I love how they do that.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. So I can't get out of a podcast on the Carousel of Progress without talking about the music. And that's going to be my last item. So, in 1964, the Walt Disney Company commissioned two of their very prolific writers, composers, Richard M. Sherman and Robert B. Sherman, to write There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, a song that is just bursting with enthusiasm and optimism, talking about technological innovation. And I found a great quote from Richard Sherman where he said, "In a way, it was Walt's theme song because he was very positive about the future. He really did feel there was a great big beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day." And I tried to find a source for this next quote that I heard. So I'm not sure it's really a quote from one of the Sherman brothers, but I think it is. That writing the show for the Carousel of Progress was like saying, "Here's a shoe, design a foot." The music is actually incredibly complicated and amazing because it has to portray a message of progress. It has to subtly get people to want to buy appliances because that's what the sponsor General Electric did. It has to be upbeat. It has to feed the musical styles of the 1900s to today. And it all has to happen in exactly 40 seconds for every time that theater turns. And that's just a huge thing to ask of any song. I think the fact that they got that song created at all is a tribute to the genius of the Sherman Brothers. But then they did it not just once, but a second time. So in 1974, General Electric, who was sponsoring the Carousel of Progress, they wanted a new song in time for the carousel to move from Disneyland to the Magic Kingdom. And this time, they wanted a song that wasn't so much about, hey, think about the great things of tomorrow and maybe buy an appliance tomorrow, but think about the great things of today and go out and buy an appliance today. So they wrote a song that's called The Best Time of Your Life, which sometimes I've incorrectly called Now Is the Time, because that's the first line in the song, but that's not the name of the song. It's called The Best Time of Your Life. And that song was put in place when the carousel was moved to the Magic Kingdom in 1975. But this was a little interesting tidbit about the music behind the Carousel of Progress. In 1982, General Electric commissioned a third song from the Sherman Brothers. And it was a song called New Horizons. So there have actually been three different songs for the Carousel of Progress, but only the first two were ever used. That third song, though, did end up in the Horizons attraction in Epcot, and you were able to hear it in one of the scenes. So I think it was interesting that there were three different songs, all written by the Sherman Brothers, all incredibly difficult to pull together. But each one is very memorable, at least the two I've heard, very memorable and just amazing pieces of music. I think it was also interesting that the very first song, There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, could actually be heard in the Horizons attraction in one of the scenes. There was an Art Deco scene in that attraction, and you could hear the radio playing the Carousel of Progress in Horizons. Which I think is very interesting because a lot of people have speculated that Horizons was the sequel to the Carousel of Progress. So the Carousel of Progress followed a family through the progress of the 20th century, and then Horizons at Epcot followed a family through progress of the 21st century. So I think the music behind the Carousel of Progress is awesome. Some of my favorite Disney music, and the fact that the Sherman Brothers pulled it off at all is just amazing.
I love that little, there's a vignette that you can see when you're going up to the attraction if you're waiting for, you know, the 2 minutes, not the hour, you know, the 2 minutes that you have to wait. And they have the screens up there showing Walt interacting with the Sherman Brothers, and they're kind of playing out the process of ironing out the tune. You know, that was just the time where I'd love to have been a fly on the wall during those years when, you know, that was the Mary Poppins years. Just some really amazing music was coming out. Not just for the, you know, the films, but for the parks as well, and just to think that, you know, these two guys just are really the backbone of so much in terms of incredible music that's in the Disney catalog. It's so impressive.
Yeah, so many songs that you know by heart, songs that are the soundtrack of your childhood. came from Robert and Richard Sherman. And that's such a hard thing to do, to make something that, a song that conveys a message that is catchy, that's entertaining. And in the case of the Carousel Progress, has to be played in different styles and last for a certain amount of time. Those guys were just incredible. Just incredible.
And, you know, when I'm flipping flapjacks on Saturday morning, my two-year-old son, he can sing along with it. My daughter could do it, too, when she was his age. You know, just to have a song that has all of that, plus it's catchy for kids. That's just, it's amazing to think that it hits all of those different aspects of just the quality of the music.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a musical scholar, but I have heard people say that the Sherman Brothers are right up there with Gershwin and some of the people who have had the biggest impact in American musical culture.
I believe it. That's just, it's very impressive.
Yeah, those guys are amazing. All right, we have made it through the top six reasons not to overlook Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress. Number one, storytelling. Number two, the history of Walt's involvement in the attraction. Number three, the details you can see. Number four, the technology of moving people. Number five, education. And number six, music. Gotta say, Carousel of Progress, one of my favorites. Next time you go, don't skip it. Take some time to stop and enjoy a true Disney classic.
Agreed. Write it a couple times.
And remember that you and 200 friends can do it at the same time, and you don't have to wait for a whole hour like those people did in 1964.
No need for a fast pass. Yeah, just cruise on up and enjoy it.
That's right. Enjoy. Derek, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks, Herb. I really appreciate the time.
You know, any wish is possible. All it takes is a little.
Well, we've made it through the list of the top six reasons not to overlook Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress, but the conversation isn't over. I would love to hear what you think about our list. Do you have some ideas about the Carousel of Progress? I would love to hear them. Visit the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/15 or worldofwalt.com/carouselofprogress. Those pages work great for desktops, tablets, and smartphones. Leave your comments in the comments section and check out what other folks think as well. If you liked today's podcast, it would be super if you would rate it and review it on iTunes. It's easy to do by following the simple instructions at worldofwalt.com/iTunes. For those of you who have already rated and reviewed the podcast, I'd like to give you my sincere thank you for doing that. It's your reviews that help other people learn about the podcast so it can reach more folks, and it's also a great personal encouragement to me. So again, thank you. It's easy to get in touch with me. Let me know what you think about today's show, or just stop by and say hi. There are four super simple ways to get in contact with me. Number one, you can send an email to me at info@worldofwalt.com. Two, you can leave a voicemail message. Call me at 407-391-5023. Number three, leave an online voicemail message for me at worldofwalt.com/voicemail. Or number four, follow me on social media. On Facebook, I'm at facebook.com/worldofwalt. And on Pinterest, I'm at pinterest.com/worldofwalt. I'd also like to invite you to participate in a contest that's open to the folks who listen to the podcast and visit the show notes page. Head over to the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/15. There you can enter to win a $100 Disney gift card. It's easy to enter by following the simple directions on the page, and it's my way of saying thanks for listening. To wrap up for today, I would like to give you a huge thank you for spending a little bit of your time with me. I'd also like to thank everyone who visits worldofwalt.com. On the website, you can find Disney articles, enter sweepstakes for tremendous prizes, and you can chat with other folks who like Disney in the forums and in the comments sections. By listening here and by visiting the site, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you. And that is pretty cool. Thank you so much for being a part of it. Until next time, my friend, may God bless you.
Just a dream away. So there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Just a dream away.